Okay, can everybody see the screen? Okay. Okay. So today what I'm going to talk about is SAGE, which is kind of has a triple meaning, but it's a piece of software that I've been writing for about the last year and a half now. And it is extremely relevant to the course I'm teaching, since having an environment in which to do the calculations and implement the algorithms of this course is one of the main motivations for the creation of SAGE. SAGE does a lot more than just modular forms. It doesn't do enough modular forms right now. So I'm going to tell you all about SAGE. So about 2 months ago, I was reading the SAGE mailing list, and this guy wrote an email, some random person I had never heard of. He said, "My name is Tiziano, and I'm from Italy. I'm writing this mail first of all because I'd like to thank you all for SAGE, something the world was really missing. Every few computer algebra system I've tried has reinvented many times the wheel without being able to build the car. And the goal of SAGE is to really build the car. I want to make, and me and there are a lot of other people working on this, but we want to make a computer algebra system that does more than just a little, well, if you look at a lot of computer algebra systems out there, they recode algorithms that have been implemented over and over again in other systems, and they don't sort of make use of what's already there in order to make sort of a system that you can do everything in. If you look at the commercial ones, they sort of do everything, but they are commercial, and there are drawbacks to that, as I'll explain. Here's another email. It's just a positive email from the guy who started Perry 20 years ago, Ali Cohen. So here's a little summary of my experience with software in mathematics. It starts in the mid-90s when I was a grad student. So I couldn't figure out what to do for about 3.5 years, and I kept, almost deciding to drop out of grad school. But then finally, Ken Rivett asked a question about discriminants of Hecke algebras. By the way, I will define Hecke algebras next time on Wednesday. And somewhat surprisingly, I was able to answer it via a calculation to some extent. And this really got me excited about computing in a number of theoretic contexts, but in particular with modular forms. So I spent a summer in my room entirely in C++, a program for computing with modular forms, and used it in order to write a paper with Kevin Buzzard and to do some joint stuff with Barry Mazur. And you can download and run this right now, but trying to compile it would not be easy, just because the libraries that it depended on have changed substantially and so on. David Cole visited me and looked at the program I was writing. David Cole is a grad student at Berkeley also, and he had left, but I was seeing a writing an interpreter for Hecke, and he thought it was a little bit sad that I was spending time writing an interpreter. And then this guy, Alan Steele, he's Australian. He's one of the main authors of Magma. So for commercial computer algebra, there's Mathematica and Maple, which are very famous. And there's some not quite as famous systems like Maxima. And I don't know. I mean, there are others that sort of fell by the wayside. And then there's Magma, which isn't exactly commercial, but isn't free. It's a closed source, expensive program, but it's a non-profit organization that creates it. Whatever non-profit is, but officially it's a non-profit. So anyways, Alan Steele, he was an undergrad, I think, at the University of Sydney, and he sort of got recruited to work with the Magma Group and has been working for them for at least 10 years. Anyways, he convinced me to use Magma. I asked him any question, he could give me an in-depth answer about how he implemented the answer to that question in Magma. So he really, really knew what he was doing. So I learned a huge amount from him. I wrote a massive amount of code in Magma. And then I got really frustrated about 2 years ago because Magma's closed source, the development model's closed. I was one of the developers, so that wasn't so bad. But when I had some conflict with John Cannon, who's in charge of Magma development, he would always win, of course. So a really big problem is that it's expensive. If you'd like to have Magma on your PC, you have to spend, as a student, $100. As a postdoc, $200. As a person like me, about $1,200. And for a site license, it's even much more expensive. And that's essentially per year. So it's not cheap. The prices may have changed, but usually prices only go up on software. There's also a lot of very annoying issues with the language. So I should say, why use Magma instead of Mathematica or Maple? Magma has an absolutely massive amount of algebraic number theory and group theory code in it. It has more number theory related stuff than anything else right now. And in contrast, Maple and Mathematica, at least as compared to Magma, have almost nothing at the edges of research in number theory. So it wouldn't really be worth considering using Mathematica or Maple to do some serious number theory right now, unless you wanted to write a large amount of stuff. The reason John Cannon's had a lot of money, and he's specifically targeting number theory over the last 6 or 7 years, and or more, maybe 8 or 9 years, and he's brought people down there. For example, he brought me down there 3 times to Sydney, Australia, to write code for Magma. So with that sort of resources, Magma has now a lot of really amazing stuff implemented in it. He has a number of people who are the world experts in various things that work there full-time implementing algebraic number theory related code. So it really blows away any other system as far as functionality goes. But it has all these problems. And as a programming language, it's really like, for example, you can't define your own objects. It's very difficult to save individual objects. It's a custom programming language. Unlike C or Java or something which is mainstream, Magma is just its own language, which is kind of common with mathematics, that mathematicians make their own languages. So I got frustrated. Another issue came up. I started thinking about trying to do something different, and I met this guy in Austin, Texas, a grad student, and he asked this really simple question that sort of puzzled me what the answer should be. But he said, if I come up with a new algorithm, what should I implement it in? Should I spend 2 months implementing it in Magma? Should I spend a lot of time and try to write it in C, but maybe it'll take me a year because a lot of the basic libraries aren't there? If I write it in Magma and write a paper using it, how can people use it if the program isn't free? And Magma, it's not like everybody has Magma. Like with Maple and Mathematica, at least most institutions have a discount, or it's not too hard to get. For example, here at University of Washington, faculty can get Maple and Mathematica for free. I'm sure students can get it cheaply, but Magma, there's no license at all. So he asked, what should we implement in the node to tell him? But a year later, I met this guy, David Joyner, at an American Math Society meeting and started talking with him, and Sage got started then. So these people, I wrote a huge amount of code, but all these other people have written a lot of code, and we've created a computer algebra system essentially the last year and a half, which is really unusual in that it's not at all about reinventing wheels or being exclusive or being the one you should use instead of something else, as I would explain in great detail.
But there are a lot of people out there that contribute to it. Now I'm going to tell you about it.
Here's a picture of the first workshop. You can see Alex right there. In the back of them, there are a bunch of other people. Here's David Cole, some grad students, and undergrad from MIT, and various other people. This is one of the guys that wrote the OS X kernel. So he was a kernel hacker at Apple for 6 or 7 years. He's one of the world's experts on computing with Hilbert module forms. So it was just a big group of people. I got them all together for a weekend, and we talked about Sage and a bunch of other computer algebra systems and kind of threw everything together.
Whoops, oh no. Sorry, I had to skip to the very end.
So let me tell you what Sage is. So this is the three-sentence slide that answers the question, what in the heck is Sage? So it's really three separate things in one. One, it's a distribution of free math software. So there's a tarball on the Sage website. You download it. It's you can type make, and it builds a whole bunch of different math software. And it will build on a large number of different systems. It's pretty well tested. So it supports OS X, Sigmund Windows, and Linux, and with some work you can compile it on Solaris. But if you have ever downloaded software and tried to compile it yourself, you... Yes, please.
You don't need that to compile it, just need
that.
No. Okay, yeah.
So there's a... I'll get to that in a second, but actually, I'll get to that. That's point three. You don't... Sage is a completely independent system that doesn't require you to buy any other systems or IT's, at least in the sense of one. And there's a lot of code there that works without requiring any other system to be available or any other software to be available, except maybe a compiler. But if you've ever downloaded and tried to build a program yourself, you notice that often there are those library dependencies, and you know, it says, I can't build it because blah, which explodes. And then you get frustrated because you maybe don't know C really well, or C++, or whatever language the program's written in. With Sage, all the dependencies are included and built as part of building Sage. And the exact correct versions of the libraries that things depend on are included and tested together. I mean, when you're just sort of playing around doing tech and stuff, you don't care if maybe there's a slight error in what you're doing because the program's been tested against a different version of a library than the one that's on your computer. When you're doing mathematics, it's pretty crucial that if there are a huge number of automated tests that the program works, that they've been runs in a very similar context to the context in which you're using the program. So, for example, if I find a small, it's just nice having all the libraries together, because some people will disagree, but no problem. I mean, they are for mathematics. This is the way to go. So it's a distribution. A huge amount of work goes into making it so you can compile everything easily without doing anything. Type make, and that's it. That's a big part of the work. But that's something that has nothing to do with making a new computer algebra system. This could very well just be a tarball full of software. You type make, get it all, and then you make binary versions of it that you can use on that architecture, sort of a supplement to something like Think or apt-get, which is much less complete for mathematics than Sage. Two, it's a new computer algebra system. It's similar to GAP and Magma in that it's very structured, in that you have rings and fields and elements of rings, elements of fields, you have algebraic varieties, you have spaces of modular forms. You have these as fundamental objects in the system. And you can create your own new objects that are like that. That's very different than something like Mathematica or even Paris, where if you type something in, it just tries to make sense of it symbolically, if there's any possible way to do that. Whereas a Sage will often do the syntax of it. The reason is that Sage is really just the Python interpreter with a bunch of libraries, and Python is a mainstream programming language which objects have types and so on. Three, and this gets back to your question, Sage is a way to use the software that you've already used for mathematics together. So say you have Magma and you've written a large amount of code in it, such as, for example, me, I've done that. So you'd still like to use that code. Sage,
yeah. So here's a little example. Okay. So is that clear enough for everyone? I can make the font bigger by just doing this, I think. Still jaggedy, but hopefully that's good. Okay, so here's an example. I'm going to do the amazing calculation of 2 + 2, but in Magma. Okay. So what happens as I do this is it's firing up Magma in the background. It now has a running Magma program in the background, and that program is computed 2 + 2. If I ask for something else, for example, factorization of 2006, it's now essentially instantaneous because it's already started up this Magma process in the background. But there are similar functions like Magma for a whole bunch of different computer algebra systems. I can't show you the Mathematica and Maple ones right now because I don't have those on the OS X partition of my laptop.
Yet.
But, and you can do more complicated things like ask for the rank of the elliptic curve with with that's defined by that equation. And you can even do it in a nice sort
one
of...
One is 3, 4, oh, okay.
Here,
okay, those are the coefficient of x.
Yeah.
And,
so you can make the elliptic curve, and then you can say E dot... You can say E dot rank, and you get the rank.
So you could use this to compute the rank using two different programs, for example.
Sage itself has a program for computing ranks of elliptic curves. This is directly in Sage, has nothing to do with magma. For F, I'm making an elliptic curve in Sage. It prints in the same way as in magma. Then you say F dot rank. In Sage, it's everything's lowercase.
And that computed the rank. Now these computations are totally independent. But notice I didn't do any cutting and pasting, switching between different programs. You get through everything in one place, under one head, if you like.
I know you.
I know. I spent a long time doing something.
What's your favorite curve to compute the rank of?
Y squared plus y is equal to x cubed minus x.
Y squared plus y is equal to. Is that it?
It should be one.
Nope. Dang it. X cubed minus x. Yeah, that should be it. Nope. Dang it. What is wrong? Oh, I know. Oh, that one. So it's rank one. We can do other things. Ask for the generators. You can do arithmetic on curves too. So you can take this generator P. You can say 20 times P. 50 times, 500 times P.
Wow.
So that's a pretty big point.
I don't. Wow.
Yeah. So, but the point is just that, you know, there are various parameters for computing the rank. It's nice to be able to just use them all from one command interface. So that's what 3 is about. Or, oops, it's like a page to next. That's what 3 is about.
So Sage is 3 things. One, getting a bunch of open source math software together, you get this tarball where you can, you know, I have a careful list of what the licenses are for all the software in the tarball. You can change anything in there, rebuild it, see what the effects of your changes are, put little tracing statements in the code, all completely free. A huge amount of work goes into this. It's really, really a different type of work than the work that goes into this, which is writing the new computer algebra system. Part of this is thinking, you know, rethinking algorithms and re-implementing them. I've implemented a lot in magma, but I'd like to move it into Sage. I've implemented most of modular symbols in Sage now, but there's some things that are still left to do, which I want to do in conjunction with this course. And there's 3, which I just demonstrated to you, which is that you can use different systems like, you know, Maple, etc., if you have them, or magma, together, allowing to cut and paste. So these are some further remarks about the tarball. So the actual programs, and I'll list them in a minute, that are included with Sage are only ones that have, or for the most part, are only ones that have a really active development community, and they're really the very, very best part. So I'm not trying to just include everything. Like, if the quality isn't really, really high, then I'm not interested. But the things that are really, really good, and they go in. And for which there's a very obvious need in mathematics computation.
Next slide. Okay, now I'm going to give you a little propaganda. So this is a question which probably, if you've ever done computations or read a paper that has a table in it that was created using the program, you might have thought about this, or if you have paid any attention to the whole open source software business, you know, Linux, OS X is based on a BSD kind of open source operating system. There's a lot of controversy about Microsoft Word not being open source, etc. You can ask the question, does open source matter for math? Is it at all relevant? And here is an answer, not my answer. It's Joachim Yusu's answer. He is a guy who 20 years ago started the sort of best program for doing group theory that's open source. And here's what he says. You can read Seidel's theorem and its proof in Huppert's book in the library. Then you can use Seidel's theorem for the rest of your life free of charge. But for many computer algebra systems, license fees have to be paid regularly. You press buttons and you get answers in the same way as you get the bright pictures from your television set, but you cannot control how they're made in either case.
With this situation, two of the most basic rules of conduct in mathematics are violated. In mathematics, information is passed on free of charge, and everything is laid open for checking. Not applying these rules to computer algebra systems that are made for mathematical research means moving in a most undesirable direction. Most important, can we expect somebody to believe a result of a program that he is not allowed to see? And so I read this quote a while ago, and I thought, wow, it's 13 years later, and wait, so then, yeah. It's 13 years later, and I guess it was 12 years later when I read this, and I put all my work into developing for a closed source piece of software, and I write a lot of papers that include tables and claims that were computed using that program, and I, you know, send them off to a journal. They get refereed by somebody who probably doesn't have access to the program, and then they get read by other people, hopefully, and those people I know from experience very often don't have access to, say, Magma, unless I give them an account on my computer. So it's sort of problematic, and I mean, this is closed source software is how most mathematics software is, I mean, how most mathematics computations seem to be done, at least in my area. I don't know, I mean, some areas I don't think that's the case at all, but in other areas it is. And certainly in engineering it is, but engineering is a little different. Applied math is a little different. But for pure math, you really have some sort of basic rules about how things should be, and it's really kind of sad that that's not the direction in which math software has moved over the years. And I'm not sure what the reason for that is, but it's simply a fact. So there is a lot of good open source math software. It's not, especially in my area, at the forefront in the same way that the closed source stuff is. Here's the SAGE website. Any comments about that quote? It's not my quote. It's not what I think. It's what he thinks. I think you need to strike a balance. So, for example, I wouldn't be at all opposed to using Magma, I do use it a lot, or Maple or Mathematica, but it's very good to put some energy into this, and I'd be happier, for example, refereeing a paper where I could read the source code of everything. I think open source for mathematics in the long run is more desirable, but to try to just rule out using closed source is ridiculous for doing math research. Especially, and it also depends a lot on the sort of research you're doing. For example, if you're trying to figure out what's true and then prove a theorem, and you know, you think that A implies B, and you're trying to prove that A implies B, but maybe spending a day trying to figure out whether a computer agrees that A implies B is likely is a good idea. For that, it doesn't matter at all what kind of software you use. Use whatever you can, because you just want to know whether or not it's likely that A implies B. If, however, you write a paper, and in the paper you claim that A implies B for all n up to 1,000, say, and you want the reader to believe this, because that's maybe the main point of your paper, it's sad if that is done using closed source software. But it's really of a different nature. I mean, you use computation math for two things. One, figuring out what's probably true so you can prove a theorem, and two, actually proving theorems. For example, the four-color theorem, I think that's proved only using computation or sphere packing. Hales has a proof of sphere packing. Fortunately, that program is something you wrote, so you can look at it. But there are these, you know, distinctions. Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, if I publish a statement about a code having some property, and the steps are type these two lines in the Magma, and the code that actually implements them is only visible to 10 people in the world, is that a proof? And is that something that should be accepted in a refereed journal? And the general answer seems to be yes right now, and I'm not so happy with that. But that's actually what journals do, surprisingly. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you more about SAGE. So these are some specific programs that are not included with SAGE. I'll just talk about three. So caches is essentially the algebraic number three part of Magma, but with a completely different interface. It's closed source, but despite its name and the cache, it's actually completely free. Just kind of strange. So it's like zero cache by it. It's a very powerful program, and if you get SAGE, you type one command, sage-i, space cache something, and it'll download it and install cache, and you'll use it from Sage. It's just not included with Sage. Then they make it available via a pre-compile binary.
But that's a program that's included.
There's some other programs that aren't included because they are expensive, and obviously I can't include them.
So there are interfaces to all these programs
listed on the slides. There's a way to use them from within the Sage interface, or from within the Sage interpreter, except MATLAB, because I don't actually have access to MATLAB yet. But I just checked online last night at Utah. They have a site license for $100 a year, so I can go find out
so I can make a MATLAB interface.
Okay, so that was about point one, open source. Point two is a new computer algebra system. So I came up with this very silly metric of the complexity of some software, and that is the number of unique lines of code. Because I don't want to count, like, I don't know, stupid lines over and over again. So in Sage right now, if you go to the Sage source directory, the structure of Sage is that there's a bunch of packages for programs like Gap, Tari, Singular, and so on that are included with Sage. These are all open source programs that come with Sage. And then there's a Python library which implements a lot of the interfaces and new functionality of Sage. And this is a directory structure which you get if you look inside the source code for the Python library. And if you look at the number of unique lines of source code, this is what we get, about 57,000 lines. This is code that's in the files here. And if you look at the, something that's common in Python is that you should have lots and lots of examples that illustrate how things work that are automatically tested. And in Sage, I've tried hard to do that. So I've even hired students, spent a lot of time just making up examples to include, and I've written a huge number of examples. And there are now 6,602 lines of input examples in Sage.
So anytime I type,
before I release Sage, I have to check that they all work exactly as claimed.
So it's just to give you a sense that there's some new code here.
This is a more systematic listing of all of the interfaces that Sage includes. So if you want to make a computer algebra system for helping out with being useful for math research all over, if you don't want to just say focus on number theory, then you need something to do group theory discrete math. And really the canonical open source free choice is Gap, which was started 20 years ago. And you need something to do polynomial computation, so Grubner-based means, et cetera, et cetera. It's not completely canonical what you choose. It's either going to be Macaulay 2 or Singular, or maybe both. But Singular also started about 20 years ago. It's pretty robust. It has a pretty active development community. They have regular revisions. And it's not too easy to compile, but it's a lot easier to compile than Macaulay 2. So that's why we ended up kind of Singular as the main thing that's actually included in the Sage target. Macaulay 2 is pretty easy to get binaries for it, so it's easy to just use that. Macaulay 2 has some really nice functionality that Singular doesn't have. For example, Macaulay 2 can do commutative algebra over Z, Grubner bases over Z. It can do a lot of neat homological algebra, et cetera, et cetera. Singular does less homological algebra, but that's more for certain areas of algebraic geometry, and doesn't do Grubner bases over Z. Tari is really the canonical thing for number theory, and it's very simple, but very, very tight is, I guess, the best word for it. C program for number theory. It has an interpreter, a C library interface, and it's been under development also for about 20 years. But even with these three, there's still a huge gap, which is the main thing that Maple and Mathematica address, which is symbolic manipulation. Calculus, finding integrals, very, very important actually, especially if you want to use your program for your calculus class, which I did a lot last quarter when I taught calculus, which is fun. Maxima was a program that was developed starting at MIT in the late 60s, and that's included with Sage standard. So when you did Sage, you get Maxima.
And some functionality of Sage that involves symbolic calculations is implemented using Maxima. But also, you can just type things like compute 2 plus 2 in Maxima as well. But you can do more complicated things, like you can make a function take that and then ask for its, you know, compute an antiderivative of it.
As you can see,
it's
computed it. That's a hard one.
Maybe I should do an easy one. Okay, there's an easier one.
But, you know, it's really nice to have symbolic integration available. It's not the most powerful. You know, if you're a hardcore engineer and you compare Maxima symbolic integration with Mathematica, you're going to say that, you know, Maxima is just not as good as Mathematica. But if you're teaching a calculus class, say a second semester calculus class with lots of integration, Maxima will trivially do every single problem that comes up. And that's really good. It's also very actively developed. It's, you know, amazingly good now. It's GPL, it's free,
it's wonderful system. So it's included with Sage.
the student of Mazur, told me he was working on, he was just finishing up his PhD thesis at Harvard, and he downloaded Sage and ended up using Maxima in Sage a lot for doing all kinds of multivariate polynomial stuff for his thesis. So he was very happy that it was so easily available via Sage. Yeah, go ahead.
How does it know that?
Oh, that's just the default. You can give a different variable if you want, such as y. And it just treats x as a constant. Yeah, it's just a default. Okay, so
then there's a bunch of specialized programs, like MWRank is for elliptic curve, rank calculations uses an invariant method, EC is a program that Mark Watkins wrote to compute a bunch of stuff about elliptic curves, Denisova wrote a huge GP script, or a collection of GP scripts for descents on elliptic curves. This has only been partially wrapped in Sage, right?
I'll show you the partial wrapping. So you can, remember our elliptic curve F, you can say F dot Simone 2 descent, and it will it'll
do an algebraic 2 descent and give you the rank and the rank of the 2 summer group, and it'll even find points on the curve. And this will work for much larger rank curves than, say, for Lemma's program, 450. It doesn't work right now the way it's wrapped in Sage when your elliptic curve is defined over a number field or when the elliptic curve has rational 2 torsion. And it's just a matter of somebody sitting down for an afternoon and writing a little bit more wrapper code understanding Simone's program in order to get that to work. So if somebody wants to help with that, it would be greatly appreciated. Especially if somebody is really interested in this. it's only been partially wrapped, but it's just an example. There's actually a lot more than I've listed here that I've added recently. This guy, Mark Watkins wrote some amazing programs for computing specialized symmetric powers of elliptic curve L functions. There's point counting stuff. Mike Rubenstein at University of Waterloo, another UW, wrote some programs for computing, for example, zeros of the Riemann zeta function, the values of the zeta function, and a whole bunch of other functions besides the Riemann zeta function. You can compute a list of the zeros on the critical strip of elliptic curve L functions, which is really neat. So he does, it's just a really neat program that's just available in Sage.
For example, you take your curve F dot L series. Now I can't remember the names of these commands, because, you know, how would I remember? But you just say, if you say f dot, by the way, just take any object and you say f dot tab, it shows you a list of all the functions you can call on that object. And they're just the functions that apply to elliptic curves. So this is a list of all of them. And there's a lot, but if you start with L series, then you see just the ones that involve L series right here.
And one of them is,
I think I need to shrink this a little. Because, yeah, see, there's more off to the right. So there's a really cool one. Zeros in interval. So this is a function. I hope you can see this.
And it's just a function that you can call on the elliptic curve. But in the background, we're going to call Mike Rubenstein's program. And Mike Rubenstein's program will then compute zeros along someplace on the critical strip up to some point,
and then give them back. And I don't remember how to use it, so you just put a question mark afterwards, and it will give you a description of how to use the program.
You or use the function. You give x, y, and a step size.
And okay, how do you actually use it? Well, you look at the examples. So there's an example. So we can try to say maybe 1 to 10.
I think there's 37A.
Yeah, so that's actually your curve. This is what would happen for a printout piece.
So, this is the imaginary part of the 0 of the L function of, in fact, the elliptic curve we've been considering. It has a 0 here, it has a 0 here, and it has a 0 here. And there's a Riemann hypothesis for elliptic curve L functions. It says that they all lie on some line.
So 37A is the Cremona?
Yeah, and actually, if you say Cremona label, it gives you back the Cremona label for a given curve.
Wow.
Which is nice.
Can you compute all the integer points on that?
No.
Oh.
Actually, I don't know if
there's only one open source program I know of. Actually, maybe it isn't open source. There's something called CMAT that is an SIMAFTH that is not, I think it's not under development anymore, and I couldn't compile as far as I tried. It's supposed to compute integral points on curves.
Oh.
And that's the only one I know of. There may be something else. Magma, I think, has something for integral points on curves, which you might want to look into. But, yeah, it's a... Okay, here's just an example of factoring minus the current year using a whole bunch of different computer operating systems, but all from step-by-step in the same session. So you see the outputs look completely different. It's always fun to see how minus one gets treated. So for gap minus two is okay, which makes sense. And for, I guess, in stage minus, there's a unit part and the prime secure. And carry and just d minus one is a prime. And maxima just symbolically factors it, which is kind of nice. Cache gives you the primes and then gives some extra info. In magma, it gives a pair, well, it gives two things. It gives the primes and the powers and then the unit. But you have to ask for the second thing back. And in maple, it looks kind of funny. And in magma, you get that. I'll say a little about this.
So I'm just telling you a lot about what's in Sage. And really what happened was about 2.5 years ago, I started wanting to make something like Sage. But I didn't know what to write it in or what components to use. So I did a lot of testing with various programming languages, trying to find what would be the right trade-off of pros and cons. And I settled on Python with something called Pyrex. This is a crucial thing. So Python is really slow if you're going to write multiply two polynomials quickly.
That would be really, really slow in Python. Sorry for falling asleep.
No cartwheel. Now you wake up, because your professor does a cartwheel in front of you, you're not going to fall asleep. Great. Back to lecture. So you have Python. This is a really nice programming language. A lot of people like it. It's a sort of language that you're happy if you get to program in it, usually, but you usually don't get to program in it because you're forced to program in C++ at a company. But it is a very nice language. It's been around for about 10 years now. It's simple, it's very terse. It's easy to read other people's... I know from experience it's easy to read other people's Python code, which is really important feature to have of a language if you're going to have a sort of widespread, very collaborative programming project that people are going to be working on all over the world. You need to be able to take code that anybody's written and just read it and have that not take you too much time. And some languages, like C, that's very difficult to do because often the dependencies and what things mean are unclear just by looking at them simply code. But unfortunately, though, Python is very nice. Has great introspection, great support for saving individual objects, et cetera, et cetera. It's potentially very, very slow. Pyrex is something that looks almost like Python. It's easy to use any C code from Pyrex, and it's compiled, so it's as fast as C. It gets turned into C, and you compile it with your favorite C compiler. So it really is just as fast as C. So the parts of Sage that need to be fast, they get rewritten in Pyrex, or written in the first place in Pyrex.
Here's a guy who wrote this really neat interactive shell that I'm using with Sage. Notice with Sage that I can scroll backwards and I can do things like type the first few letters of something and hit Control P, and it goes through just the commands that begin that way. These things are very nice to have. I can actually quit Sage and do something else, start Sage again, and my history is still there. So I don't have to retype stuff. That's very nice. That's not available in any other JavaScript system, as far as I know, a persistent history. But it's really a simple, natural thing that you're used to from using Unix shell. Use Bash or any of the Unix shells, they do that. So why not JavaScript systems? I don't know. But this guy who wrote IPython added that feature to this interactive interface. So he wrote a whole very nice interactive interface for using basically Python, and I just took it and used it as part of Sage. It's very nice that this is available. And I don't have to do anything to create it. There's a little more about why Python's good. I won't say too much more about that, except the author Guido van Rossum, he now works at Google, and he started Python, I said 10 years ago, but actually I'm wrong, it's 15 years ago. There's tons and tons of libraries for Python, for 3D graphics, numerical analysis, game programming, and so on. So, you know, if you use Magma, you have an amazing amount of number theory available in group theory and algebraic geometry, but you really don't have very much 3D graphics, video game stuff available immediately in Magma. I mean, it's just, unfortunately, the fact that, I mean, it's the fact of the matter. Nobody's written tons of stuff that makes, say, SDL, some C++ library, I think, for game programming available from the interpreter. With Python, that's already been done to a large extent. There's a project called Pygame that people use to make interactive 3D stuff in Python. This is all before Sage, but from Sage you can use all of this if you want. You just install the appropriate Python package, and there it is. And that opens up a lot of possibilities for visualization and interacting with mathematical objects in a way that you normally wouldn't. And you can say the same even about Mathematica. You might be able to buy some add-ons that allow you to do 3D graphics, but probably don't have the same range of libraries available as Python. Python is, almost from its very design, a language that lends itself very well to making interfaces to lots of other libraries, and hence there are lots of really good interfaces to other libraries available. So that's one of the things I like about Python. You have some speed disadvantages, but you have this huge plus. That's really a nice long-term thing. Python's also completely free, unlike, say, Java, but there's no halfway free versions of Python. There's the guy who wrote Python. What? Well, it's free, but it's not free. There's different levels of free. It's not open source. And with Python, you can download the source tarball for Python and build it in about 1 minute. You can make any little change you want to the Python, you know, code, and you know, watch what happens. It's all there. You can make a customized version if you want. But Java, that's much, much more complicated. There has been a lot of work to make free versions of Java, but they're not 100% compatible, and all kinds of issues there. So Java's, it's just differences of free. By free, I mean free sort of in the sense of the GPL. Or in the sense of GPL compatible license. Here's an example of some pirates code, by the way. It's worth it. Just an example. I think I'll skip this, except to say Pyrex is written by this guy in New Zealand. They have a pretty active man in this. The language almost has a finished feeling to it. It's version 0.9 something something. I don't really need anything to be added to it, but I find it very useful as it is. Here's another thing. So in Sage, this is just a nice feature of Sage that comes sort of by inheritance from having chosen Python as the implementation language. So you can take individual objects and save them to disk files and move them around and load them up again, et cetera, et cetera. So for example, you could have an elliptic curve and you want to do some calculations with it that require lots of coefficients of its L series. So you have, in other words, you want to compute a lot of these numbers. Whatever this function a and this does, you want to compute these. And maybe it takes a while to compute them. So I can show you this right here, actually. So you take our favorite curve and say, compute the first 100,000 coefficients of its modular form. And see, it takes some time. But you get them, and now you can save the thing. save the curve, I'll call it F. And now it's being saved to a file. And now, see, there's a file. It's 407 megabytes in size, and it has all these coefficients in it. It is compressed, though. See, they're big. And now you can load F back from the file. And you get your curve back, but it also has the list already in it. So any stuff, almost anything you compute about the curve, it will get saved along with the curve when you save the curve. And you can imagine using this in all kinds of ways. Maybe you're doing some computation with a space of modular forms. And you made the space, and you come to a step that requires doing some huge linear algebra calculation, which will unfortunately take a long time or maybe more memory than your laptop has. You save the space of modular forms to your disk. You copy it over to a server. You let it run for a couple hours there on a machine with more memory. And then you save it there, and then bring it back and continue the calculation on the same thing. So it's really nice to have that. It's also really good as far as, if you're doing a calculation with a whole bunch of different objects, you can do that calculation, save all of the results as individual files, and just make all those files available to other people. So you can sort of save time in a lot of it. It just makes it easier to make tables. That's something that Magma doesn't have. With Magma, you can save an entire session. You can basically save your game. You have a whole bunch of objects in there, you can save the whole thing, which usually is a very large file because it's literally taking however much memory Magma is using and dumping it to this. But there's really very, very little support for saving individual objects. And various computer algebra systems like Mathematica has a command input form, I think, which you give it some mathematic object and it'll give you back something that you should be able to type in to recover that object. But it's not really super robust, and there can be some issues with it. With Sage, there's just any, well, really it's not a Sage thing at all, it's a Python thing, but almost any object has a way of being and sort of clever recursive way. It has a representation whose whole point is to be enough to reconstruct the object. So built into the language from a low level is that objects should be reconstructable from strings. It's not, so each objects have different representations. Like this curve, it has a representation that is nice to look at and read. It has a LaTeX representation, so you want to put this curve in your paper. Well, that's not so exciting because there are no coefficients or exponents, but that's actually really boring. So I'll make one with at least some denominator. So that's the printing representation. It has a LaTeX representation where it uses appropriate LaTeX commands to nicely typeset it. And big matrices, they all have these nice LaTeX representations. They also have a third representation, which is the sort of string representation, which is kind of big, but from this string, the object can be reconstructed. And it's not as big as it looks because those are escape codes. So they should divide by 3 to be correctly. There's a help system. I already showed you this a little bit. Basically, you type a function, ? and you get information about it. But one thing that's kind of unique is that the source code is very readily available. So we kept using this anlist command, and if you type ? You get a list of, you get documentation about it. If you type 2 ? You get the source code, which is nice. So there's the source code for computation of the thing. So you can actually read the Python source code that implements computation of the anlist. And if you read it, you'll find that it's in fact just computing the corresponding curve in Pairby, which is this standard, very optimized number theory program. And then it's taking that curve and calling LAN on that curve, that's the band and Pairby for computing the anlist, getting the result and putting it back in Sage format. So that's what it does. So if you were going to use, say, the anlist command a bunch in a paper, you can look at the source code, see what it's doing, and know that you should also acknowledge Pairby, because that's really what's doing the work under the hood. And when I initially set out to create something like Sage, I thought, well, I would just look at the source code for Pairby and put the code to do it here. But really, that's stupid, because I should just call Pairby. Pairby's going to evolve and get better. So just to finish up, a just want to show you one more example. Oops. Here's a picture that I made of an L function of an elliptic curve. It's very pretty. And finally, here is my specific goals at UW for SAGE. I want to start a seminar with weekly talks, hopefully have up to 5 students and some grad students working with me, writing some SAGE code as it relates to your thesis, possibly. And I'm going to run some workshops. So, for example, there'll be one in October, where a lot of people from all over the world will come here and talk about SAGE and related software. Okay, so I'll see you all on Wednesday for HECA operators. Thank you.